Yo, what's good, Desi Hip Hop fam? Thank you for joining us today in this special episode of the Unfiltered Podcast. I am your host, DJ Raf. You can find me on Instagram, and we're hosting this on Desi Hip Hop, Facebook, and live on YouTube as well. By the way, all these episodes are also available on Spotify and everywhere else that you can stream podcasts on. So you better cop that. You know, if you want video, we got it on YouTube and Facebook. If you want audio, we got everything else. So we got you covered, man. Today, I wanted to start out by doing a quick, small announcement that we partnered up with an amazing company called Applause. It's a Desi startup, so we like to, you know, support the community as much as possible. Over here, you can see this little QR code. This thing supports, Applause. Like, this thing shows Applause's support to us. They're our new partners for this Unfiltered Podcast. Feel like they're doing a great job. You can see the link down here. You can donate to the show. You can donate to the artists. You can do whatever you want to show your support. So, you know, I really appreciate you. And on the other hand, keep those comments coming, because we're going to have a great episode today. Now, moving on to today's episode and the topic that we're discussing today. You know, as we all know, the U.S. and many parts of the world have been like in a havoc for the past couple of weeks when right after, you know, George Floyd was like ruthlessly murdered by police officers in Minneapolis. I actually live in Minneapolis, so yeah, this thing is really close to me. But that's happened, and you know, everything went into chaos, and it gave an opportunity for everyone to really think about race and really think about how it affects all of us. A lot of times we think that, oh, it's a white versus black thing, but there's many shades of brown in the middle of that. So we are part of that many shades. Today, I wanted to talk with a great panelist of guests that we have. It's a group of artists that who are, always talking about the knowledge aspect of hip hop. They use the knowledge aspect of hip hop to make music, to create music, to, you know, really support their brands through knowledge. You know, they're not the type of rappers who are trying to use a gimmick to get ahead. They're the type of rappers to use knowledge to create social change. So I am excited to bring on our amazing guests. First of all, I want to bring on a rapper who's also a doctor. So he's like Superman. He's a doctor by day. He's a rapper by night. But this guy, not only does he do both of these jobs well, he uses hip hop to talk about social issues and, bring attention to things. So I just want to welcome Lazarus into the show today. Thank you, Lazarus, bro. Thank you for joining us.
What's going on, my brother, Raph? Always hell good yeah. To see you, brother.
Yeah, man. I like your shirt, bro. It looks nice. Hell yeah. Okay, so moving forward, I wanted to introduce to the show an artist who I respect a lot from India, and she's been grinding it out since day one. Okay, she's the type of rapper who, releases all her emotions and thoughts through her music. Like, every time, every track that she's trying to make, she puts like a lot of thought into it and uses historical context and all sorts of things. So I'm going to talk less. I'm going to introduce her. Please welcome DMC all the way from Mumbai. Thank you for doing this, D.
What's up, Raf? How's it going?
Pretty good.
What's up, D?
Good to see you guys. Moving forward, I want to introduce the next guy. He is a rapper from Philadelphia, but he's also Gujarati. And all of his content is also very thought-provoking, you know? And, you know, the thing I like about this guy is that he works his ass off, okay? He's going to put out tracks every week. He's that type of a rapper, right? So I want to introduce and welcome Ty Zhu to the show.
Hey.
Welcome to the show, bro.
What's good, Raf? What's good, brother?
Not much, man. Last time I saw you in a music video, you had a huge beard.
I did.
I guess that's
coming back. It's coming back. Yeah, it's work in progress. I had to take it down.
That's awesome. Okay, and next guest we have, last but not least, Ali Culture from Virginia. He's also a Pakistani-American rapper. All of his subject matters are really important because he's had experiences growing up on the West Coast of the U.S. as well as the East Coast. And his father actually passed away from a terrorist activity. So, you know, he's really passionate about these type of things. And, you know, I really wanted to bring him on to have his perspective. Welcome to the show, Ali Culture.
What's up, Raph?
What's good, bro?
How you doing, man? Salute Lazarus D. Tazu, how y'all doing, man?
Man, glad to see you guys, man. You know, to kick off this episode, I wanted to kick it off with something special, you know, about the subject matter that we're talking about. So last year, there was DMC, who's joined us today. DMC released an album last year called D Equals MC Squared, right? And there was one of these songs over there called Rung. And Rung, you know, translates to color. So she really went deep into that. So before we talk about anything, I just wanted to play a little clip of D introducing Rung, and we'll talk about that right after the video.
Rung, for me personally, is the most soulful track from the album. Like the name suggests, it stands for color. I'm talking about the story of my own brown skin prejudice that I've had growing up as a Hindu kid in a country where more than half the population is dark. My obsession with fair skin was so much that I literally used to ask God to make my skin lighter. Being a kid in the fifth grade who doesn't even know what racism is yet. Through this song, I'm just trying to reach out to the really young generation who don't even know what racism is yet, but the society is such that the color of their skin is just put into their head since they're a child, you know, since they're a kid. So basically, it's just me trying to tell them that, kids, see, if I had a time machine, I would literally take it back and I would tell my younger self that the color of your skin is only a big deal if you make it one.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was D introducing Rung from her D Equals MC Squared album from last year. So D, I just want to put the mic on to you first, man. Can you tell us a little bit about what inspired you to make that track?
I think, as I said in the track itself, the entire album stems from my own story. And basically, there's this temple my mom used to take me every single weekend, and I used to take pradakshina, and I did not even know what I was wishing for. But when I was in the fifth grade, I used to be like, please make my skin lighter, please make my skin lighter, for some reason, you know, because like I used to dance and stuff. So people used to, even when they wanted to say something nice about me, they felt the need to add this preface of Kali, basically. I used to dance in a lot of Aishwarya Rai songs. So they used to be like, Kali Aishwarya, not just like you do good, whatever you're doing good. Nah, it's necessary to make you realize that you are dark or you are light skinned, basically. So the track, Sunit Music, when he played me the beat, the chorus goes like, Mere Lado Da Rang Hai Gora. So basically, it's like a lady saying that my daughter's skin is fair and I'm going to apply all sorts of shit on her skin to make sure that she remains fair, because I don't know, Indians, South Asians, just like, despite more than 70% of our population being really, really dark, the representation of dark-skinned women or dark-skinned men when it comes to television or movies or anything, it's basically just non-existent. So it's something that is ingrained in your brain since you're a kid, when you don't necessarily know what, why is it important what your skin's color is. Coming from my own experience, I definitely wanted to make a song about it. And when he played me that beat, I was like, yes, this is it. This has to be the way to go.
Right. No, that's awesome. What you know, one of the things you mentioned is really important here. It's like you mentioned that it's ingrained in the South Asian brain, right? And I feel like that has a lot to do with, you know, 200 years of being controlled by the British government and military and stuff like that. What do you think about that, Lazarus?
Man, I mean, I just think, you know, for me, my perspective is that, you know, I was born and raised in America. So, you know, my perspective growing up as a Desi and being surrounded by people that don't look like me at all, that's always been, just kind of put me outside of the box, man. I've always looked at myself as like, do I belong? Am I alien or who am I? You know what I'm saying? So I just kind of grew up in a setting where I literally felt every day of my life that I didn't belong where I was at. Like, I'm not black. I'm not white. What am I? And so the only, you know, connection to my cultural heritage and my background was my home when I was, with my parents and my brother and stuff like that. So it was definitely a feeling of alienation. And you just feeling like, my skin, even like, when I was going to school on a school bus, kids telling me I got sand on my face, like, what's wrong with you? Like, almost like I had a disease or something. So it's just like playing into the fabric of how you think about racism. Like, I was just having this conversation with somebody. It's like we make race such a big thing that it becomes such a prominent disease. It's like, Raph, what if I told you, like, your fingers are 4.5 inches versus somebody's who's 4 inches, and you keep saying that to somebody, like, yo, your finger's too short, his finger is longer, and you start making this a thing. Over time, people are gonna start hating each other because of the length of our fingers. Like, you make it something, and it becomes that. You feel me?
Right.
Whereas,
right.
Why can't I look at this person and say, that's just another human being? That's just another human being. That's just another human being. And if you look at the world in that perspective, then there's not going to be racism.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's true. You know, that makes a lot of sense. You know, you keep pushing that same narrative. Obviously, it's gonna get fucked at one point, right? That makes a lot of sense. Ali culture.
Now, like, mm-hmm. With the race, I'm sorry, not to cut that off.
Go ahead.
Now, yeah. I feel like racism is being projected to the forefront to the point where people that never really thought about it, like friends of mine that never really thought about the black and white, now they're starting to really, oh, he is black or he is white. Like, you know what I'm saying? Mm. Like, I just feel like we need to let people look at each other as human beings.
No, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, what you mentioned, like, more people are getting to know about the racism and about the issues. So, like, some would argue that that's a great thing, that, you know, it's, you know, in the forefront of conversation. And some would say that, you know, that's not a great thing, because, like, we're now talking about racism way too much. What do you think about that, Taizu? I'll throw this to Taizu. What do you think about that?
That we're talking about racism too much right now?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, are you watching the news? I don't know who's saying this. Are they watching what's happening in the world to make that call? It's like, you guys are talking about coronavirus too much. It's like, that's the only fucking thing happening right now in the whole world. What else are we supposed to talk? So that's now true. We're this. So with the racism, touching on what Laz said, why we look at each other this way, it all comes from tribalism, right? These are all modes of survival. We looked before, how do we identify a threat before? You look at a lion, it looks like a tiger, it looks like a jaguar. These are all stereotypes. These are modes of survival. We used this when we didn't organize survival in the way we have it now, where we just have, you know, entire organization, systems of food, health, all of this. But before, we used to identify things and stereotype them. Now that we're out of that age of survival and we're moving now towards this age of enlightenment, we still live, though. We judge people, right? The first two things you notice about somebody is their gender and their skin tone. As soon as you look at somebody, the first two things you'll try to identify to understand the context of that dialogue, of this interaction, is their skin tone and their gender, because that's how our social norms have been constructed. Now that we're moving towards humanity, right, which is what Laz was speaking on, why don't we view each other as humans? Because when you ask somebody where they're from, they'll say, I'm from Pakistan, I'm from India, I'm from here, I'm from America. Because we've already tribalized, right? Because we started with villages. Villages got too big, we made cities. Cities got too big, we made states. States got too big, we made countries. But now that we're so big that we're an earth, how do we reorganize and restructure the way we deal with one another? And that's these next steps. That's the forward motion, right? How do we look at each other as human? Who are you? What are you? I'm human. But no, you're not human, because India first and France first and America first and everything is first, 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 first. But it's humanity first. That's what we're talking about. Right. So my the thing is, like, how can we not talk about race when that's all we notice? Like, we don't see purple. Even in colorism is real. What Dee's talking about. Why do we pray to Lakshmi? We pray to all our goddesses, then we bleach their skins. How does this make sense? This is ludicrous. But that's what I'm saying. Like, now that we're having these dialogues, like George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, these things that are happening now that have been happening forever. But now it's like we have so much exposure. We have so much time on our hands now, too. Coronavirus has been a blessing. Everybody's at home. Everybody's consuming these videos. Everybody's livid and has nothing better to do but to be like, yo, fuck this. Let's set something on fire. I'm pissed.
Right.
So all these factors have come together to create a moment. You know, and that's what we're in right now. That's why we're having this conversation, because all these factors have come together perfectly to say, hey, what's up? What are you going to say, world, humanity? What's your response? You know?
Right, right. Facts, man. I like that. I like your passion, man. Like that definitely looks like, you know, it like struck a chord, and like it makes sense. We all should feel that way, you know. Like it sucks to see that on video, but it's just like, fuck, you know, everybody had to see it, you know. Moving on to Ali culture real quick. You know, I know like you had a lot of personal experiences related to this. So I wanted you to share a little bit about your personal experiences, you know, growing up in the West Coast and East Coast. Like tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, no doubt. A lot of really wonderful things that brothers and sisters over here said about everything. I think from my perspective, starting with, you know, our communities, I remember growing, you know, I predominantly grew up in black and brown neighborhoods, Mexican, African American, you know, and I remember I'm entrenched in black culture. And, you know, my connections to my roots and heritage is really home, like Lazarus was saying, or the masjid. That's the only two places that I would kind of encounter the origins, right? And when I go to the masjid, the most common thing that was always said to me, you know, pops wasn't around, so I'm kind of alone in the men's section, you know. And it was always like, ye kala tu lak that? Why does he wear black clothing? Why does he look like that? So it really used to isolate me a lot, and it made me a little bit more rebellious growing up. That, well, since they're saying that, next time I come to the mosque, I'm gonna rock a do-rag, you know? I'm gonna make sure I'm sagging my pants more, you know? I'm gonna bring everybody outside. It made it more rebellious because I couldn't understand that, you know? And I think from our generation, we've definitely separated from that British influence that maybe our parents had a lot of. And I think that was due to, like you're saying, systemic oppression to them for how they look, the skin color that they have, right? So they looked at that as an inferior thing. So they wanted to be whiter because they want to be more like the oppressors. Right? They don't want to be the oppressed anymore, you know? And I think that I think we're going to break that from our generation. But the thing that I still respect a lot about the previous generation is that they kind of gave us the blueprint for how to escape poverty or ignorance, which is the influence that we have in our communities behind education, you know, which was very difficult for me growing up in environments where you might have a little bit more poverty or it's Section 8, it's subsidized housing. There, you don't have a large influence on education. And I truly believe that the way to break racism, ignorance, tribalism, I mean, when you talk about tribalism too, my brother, like, you know, growing up, the most common question for me stepping outside was, where are you from? What hood are you from? What do you claim? And I don't think, you know, and that's more like a gang mentality. And that was everywhere. So I think that tribalism is going to be hard to break in one sense. But the influence on education that we have in our community, I know it helped me break all sorts of barriers because it expanded my network. It expanded my problem solving. It expanded how I could critically analyze the situation. And if I didn't, like, you know, if I got bad grades, I went home, my mom whooped my ass, you know? It was like, you know, if you don't change that, you're going against the whole purpose of why we came here, you know, because you couldn't get that over there. And you got to be the man of the house, you know? So I think for us, if we put more of an influence on getting educated, you know, when you're in certain environments, like, you don't see a lot of options out. It's short-term gain for long-term pain. Let me try to make as much money as I can right now, and I'm going to have long-term pain later on. Where vice versa, if you take the short-term pain, you got long-term gain if you can educate yourself, you know? Right. I give a lot of props to Lazarus, too, because I see how, you know, that's kind of the blueprint that he took, too. So, you know, in my opinion, I think that is the secret to breaking, you know, these barriers of racism and everything that we got going on.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I want to say to the rest of the guests over here as well, is like, you know, feel free to jump in, ask questions, you know, let's have like a panel discussion among all of us, you know what I mean? So whatever's in your mind, whatever thoughts you have, let's get it out there, let's discuss and, you know, really grow as a community. I think one of the important things that Ali Culture mentioned was that, you know, with the oppression that we faced as a culture, like, you know, there are Indian people in Africa as well. You know, there are Indian people who have been in like Ivory Coast for like seven generations, you know, like, and it's interesting. You know what I mean? The question we have to ask is like, how did those people get there? We obviously know the answer, you know? So we've been oppressed like heavily. But one of the things that Ali Culture mentioned was that to fight that oppression, we went back the other opposite and we were like, we want to be fair. Is that like, I know that in India, in Bangladesh, where I'm from, a Procter & Gamble, an American company, puts out, you know, Fair and Lovely. Like that's a product that, you know, that we get in South Asia. That's a product you do not get in the US. You know, it's a weird situation. Dee, what do you think about all this? Like, what can we do to move forward from this type of situation? Like, I know, like, it's ingrained in the culture. Everybody's putting on Fair and Lovely. I grew up with that shit. Like, you know, I'm a guy and there are relatives in my family tell me, oh, put on a little bit of Fair and Lovely. It's like, fuck that. You know, I don't want to do that. So what do you think about that, Dee?
I think much like everything else, change definitely begins at your own house. So you have to stand up to the mentality that your own family has. So if you hear them say something which, you know, you necessarily don't agree with, I think our generation has definitely learned that just because we are younger than you or just because you are elder than us, it doesn't automatically make your thinking right or our thinking wrong. So especially being a hip-hop artist, Taizu was saying, Ali was saying, basically, like, when people asked him what, you know, like, why are you wearing this, I'm gonna basically amp it up more and throw uncomfortable things on your face. So I feel like we need to challenge the mentality right at home, because when, like, this is something I said in one of our other live sessions, Raf, that, you know, there's a saying in Malayalam that when a house changes, when you change one person's mind in your house, then the society will change. When the society will change, then the country will change. And when the country changes, only then there can be change in the entire world. So you need to start with small steps. That's what I do now. Like, even with my own song, Rang, that opened a lot of perspective to the people in my own family, you know, because it's easier to kind of talk to the people who you yourself know and have personally made you feel prejudiced in some or the other way. So for me, I think there is no better way than to challenge the stereotypes right near you, because that is more impactful than doing anything on social media or, you know.
Sure.
Basically, whatever you try to do through songs, that's going to be there. But unless and until in your day-to-day life there is no change brought, then it's short-term. It's not going to be long-term.
Right. Yep. That makes sense. I want to pose a question to Taizu related to what Dee said. Dee mentioned that it starts in the home. You know, it starts, the change begins at our own homes, talking to our own families and friends. Taizu, what do you think is the path to change?
Yeah, I mean, I think it begins there. We live in a country, we live in a world of laws. So unless anarchy is what the other thing we're posing, which nobody is because it's not a sustainable system, if we move towards a structured law, we need to change the laws. Caste system has been abolished, but we still ask people their last names and ask them if they're Brahmin or what they are, right? Even though the laws have been changed, the people's mentality haven't. So first the laws need to change, then the mentalities change because people have to follow the laws. But it's a systemic thing. That's why it's systemic racism, because the system is racist. The laws are prejudiced. They were written by people, not for us. No, but the founding fathers, if we stood next to them, I don't think they'd be like, yeah, these guys, like, I'm representing these guys. No, it wasn't made for us. That these were slave owners that wrote these laws. Right. So first the laws need to change. That's what these protests are doing. The protests move the hand of the politicians, right? When you get enough noise in the streets, the people have to respond. The politicians have to respond because they represent us. We forget that in a broken system because we feel like we're not represented and we have no access to that, to high levels of power. But those are the shifts that need to happen. We need people that look like us in positions of power. We need people that think like us in positions of power. Because then guess what? We won't need to protest because the laws will be in place, you know, and when they're broken, then we can move accordingly, you know, with the laws made to protect us, to actually protect us. That's the problem, because the flip side of that is anarchy, which is not sustainable. We can't run a world on anarchy. We need a system, though, that works for us. And that starts, like what Dee is saying, from conversations at home, absolutely, right? Because we are the people. We the people. If the people are sick, everything's going to be sick, right? We just saw that with coronavirus. And I'm talking about mental illness. But with the laws, if we can get the laws in place that represent us, I think we can then stand on those as a foundation to build the future. That's what we need now, though. We need people in positions of power that look like us, think like us, talk like us, and we need that unity which we have now. You know, once those laws shift, just like, but caste system still hasn't tamed it, changed, right? Like that, this is an Indian, this is not even the Britishers. That was something like colorism and anti-blackness, we can associate with it with Britishers. We still have anti-blackness though in brown culture. I used to hear all the time when I was younger, no BMW. No black, Muslim, or white. I'm like, what kind of bullshit joke is that? I don't know if you guys have heard this, but this is a Gujarati thing. Like, that's racism in a Gujarati context against Muslims, our own brothers. These are all our brothers and sisters, white and black. This is all, again, like we were talking about earlier, Ali and Laz were saying. Humanity. It's the same pool that we're talking about. The same species, right? We just have a different tanning system. But everything else is the same. You know what I mean? But yeah, that's that disconnect. There's an anti-blackness that we're not able to confront. It's not even, it's if you look at any place, the darker your skin, the less privilege you have, or the way you're looked at in a certain way in every culture, right? Except in America, where if you're so white, you go get a tan and now you just leveled up. But that's America, you know, we do the opposite here. But in the rest of the world, right? But that's that American privilege. It's like, oh, you guys don't want to be colored? I'm going to go get a tan. I'm American, right? So, yeah, Laz, I don't know if you're about to say something. But yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I was just saying, I agree with that, bro. I think that everything starts at the home. And I feel like, you know, just like, you know, when you're growing up and you're learning a language from your elders, from your parents and stuff like that, I feel like that's where it starts. That's when you start learning to hate somebody of a different background or a different religion or a different ethnicity. I feel like that develops when you're in that nurturing stage of childhood. And that's when it permanently becomes part of your brain that a Chinese person is like this, that an Indian person is like this, that white people are like this, that certain people, you know what I'm saying? So like, I feel like these things that are taught to us at a young age, that's where we need to start. It's like, if you watch the movie Back to the Future, you got to go back in time to the point where it all started. And that's where we need to start teaching the kids about the unification of people early on, so that they don't grow into the racist that they become. And one of the biggest weapons that we have to make this happen, to encourage this type of behavior, is what's being projected on the media every single day about certain types of people. So The information we get from our elders, our parents, our uncles, our aunts, and the information that we get from CNN and from Hollywood and Bollywood, that's what constructs the racism that ends up having us hate certain groups of people for whatever characteristics they have.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Lazarus, you know, a couple of years ago, you dropped a track called Fearless with King Crooked. Right, with Crooked Eye. And in that track, I feel like it was so interesting how you went into this racism, like this systemic racism in America, you know. It included, like, your lyrics included things about, you know, South Asians, brown, Muslim, as well as black people. And, you know, over the years, you've worked a lot with artists who are African Americans. So you have had a lot of different types of experiences within the African American community. What are some of the things that your artist friends are saying today? Like, you know, with all the protests and all the things that are going on, how do they feel about everything?
I mean, I feel like people are definitely happy at the fact that, you know, certain things are being brought to light and kind of being forced and pushed on the people, where it's kind of like, you know, certain things, they'll happen and then you'll just kind of, sweep it under the rug and just forget about it or not focus on it or not try to reform it. Now it's kind of like, it's here. You have to deal with it. You have to work with it. We have to find a solution, because if we don't find a solution, you know, this world is going to hell. It's already going to hell. So it's just, you know, this world will be gone. We have to come together. We have to understand what's going on. There's racism going on in the world. There's coronavirus going on in the world. I can tell you that because I'm in the hospital every single day working. So there's coronavirus. There's racism. The world is getting fucked up. Now we have to kind of come to this term of, what do we do to help the world and help our community? And I agree with what everyone else was saying. It starts from the home.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, man. You know, it does make me sad that the corona thing is not over yet. But we got to deal with it in a certain way. A lot of people have been feeling like, you know, the protests are going to increase corona and that type of situation. What do you guys think about these protests? Like, should that they keep going? Like, in my personal opinion, I think, you know, it's great to have them going, but I know there are other perspectives as well. What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, from a medical perspective, not to interject, but obviously, you know, I'm a little divided. I'm not one of those people that's like, okay, well, the numbers that they're giving us, I don't know that those numbers are factual, first of all. The numbers we're getting from different parts of the world. But based on my own personal experience, I can definitely tell you that since the protests, and I'm in Vegas, so it's nothing like what you're seeing in Philly and L.A. and New York and in places like that. But where I'm at, I've definitely seen an increase in the number of people that are getting coronavirus since. But we've opened up the Strip here in Las Vegas, too, so that's definitely playing a part in that as well.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm all for the protest, man. Like I said, we got to bring these things to people's attentions. This has to be a thing we talk about. Coronavirus is just in the mix at the same time. So it's like, you know, right. Being a physician, I'm like, I want to support the protest. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like we have to be wary because until there's a vaccine for coronavirus, this shit is not going anywhere. Like, it's going to stick around.
Right. I feel like somebody else also wanted to say something on that.
I was just going to say, I think protests are very important. I think protests are obviously the way that a lot of change happened in this country, including from civil rights, you know, which for Martin Luther King, for what he signed with the president, helped all of us to get to this country. But still, at the same time, I think, you know, it's important for the opportunists to also be controlled by the older heads. I know a lot of people from the neighborhoods were talking about that. It's not cool to knock your homie's food store or the cricket store or the laundromat or the local grocery store, because those businesses, they're not going to come back after. You don't, even if you have insurance, it takes 6 months before anything happens, and the business doesn't have enough cash flow to float that for 6 months, pay their employees. Now they're out of, you know, they're out of the business, and those same neighborhoods are probably not going to get more opportunity. You're just going to have more boarded up housing and real estate value that goes down. So all this is going to do, when you do that within your own communities, is that property value is going to go down and things are only going to get worse. You know, so I think the older generation needs to check the opportunists when they do things like that. It's different if you're, you know, burning down a police station. They'll tax you more, but that'll come back later. But, you know, knocking over your homie's food store, all that's just not cool. I think that's problematic overall. You know, and I think another thing from just talking about police brutality, I know that from my personal experience is being around certain things. It's just, it's gotten worse, right? Their tactics have only gotten worse. And I think from everybody that is trying to educate themselves, we got to look into who's training these lieutenants and these sergeants and these captains, because, you know, there's contracts out there to different countries in the world that are also oppressing other people. And they're training these police officers instinctively how to act like oppressors, you know, how to put your knee on somebody, how to beat somebody up before you try to de-escalate the situation, you know? So I think people got to educate themselves, if we really want change, on some of the more granular aspects of where these officers are being trained and how that's coming down the pipeline, because, you know, that's the kind of change that's actually going to create things. So that's my two cents.
Right. I have a certain take on it. It's a little controversial, but I feel like cops is going to be cops, man. Pigs is going to be pigs at the end of the day. Like, it's kind of like, it's like telling a bacteria don't infect. Like, a cop's going to end up doing shit. That's their code, bro. Has there ever been a time in history where cops ain't fucking with people and stuff? That's inherent in their nature. It's like, to take that away from them, it's like taking the infection away from a virus. Like, it's gonna happen. Now, granted, there's good cops out there too, so I'm also one of those people that don't like to paint everybody with the same brush. I know cops that are really good people. I have patients that are cops that are really good people. Now, they have good principles, just like with like we were talking about different people, different ethnicities. You don't want to paint, people used to paint me in the same brush as Osama bin Laden. No, you can't paint anybody with a whole system with the same brush. There's good cops, there's bad cops. But obviously there's a systemic problem because this is recurrent. Cops are messing with people. It's happening over and over again. But my personal take on it is, at the end of the day, cops ain't going to change. Like, what are they going to do about that?
Right.
And they're getting more flared up now. It's like, now the riots and protests, you're only seeing worse cops beating more people now. Cops beating more people. It's like, is there going to come a time where cops are going to be like, okay, everybody, let's be really good, great cops now. because of right. the pro. I just don't see that happening.
Right. That's you bring up a real quick, really good point. There was a research a number of years ago, I think it was Princeton, but I might be wrong. So don't quote me on that. But there was a research thing done by the psych department where they grouped together a bunch of students and divided them up into correctional officers and, prisoners, divided that up and then did a research, program with them.
Stanford.
Stanford
Prison Experiment, Raph. That's what it's called, the Stanford Prison Experiment.
Yeah. Awesome.
Really dope. Yes.
That's it. Like, that's exactly what I'm talking about. They created a system where it makes it simpler for the, correctional officers who are just students to get like crazy, like, use that dominance. Yeah. And, the results of that thing was so bad that they couldn't even run it for 2 weeks. They had to end it in 7 days. I think the system needs to change. Taizu, did you have more to say on that? I feel like.
No, I was going to say, like Laz was saying, like, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Like, I think that adage holds true. That if these people go unchecked, they have weapons on the side of them. They're trained by military. They have military grade weapons now, right? If in the 90s, when they passed the Super Predator Bill, which Clinton passed, right? When that happened, they added 100,000 more cops. That was the bill. Then on top of that, in 98, after he passed it, in 96, he passed the Super Predator Bill. 98, then they added 50,000 more cops. Where? New York City, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, Chicago, all the cities we're having, because they militarized. They think that we are they see us, the targets are black. They shoot at black targets. That's what they're shooting at for practice. So yeah, the whole thing needs to be changed from the ground up. And with the protests, yo, it's definitely whack being sort. My friend's store, two of his pharmacies got looted in Philly. The problem is the bodies are piling up and like nothing is happening and it keeps happening. Like Trayvon Martin was years ago. What you saw in the Chappelle special, Zimmerman, who's alive, is signing Skittles bags. That's like, if that doesn't boil your blood, that's like crazy. So it's like, yeah, it sucks that things are getting burned and set on fire. And it's maybe in our own communities, but guess what? Next time something happens and the whole city's on fire, you're going to think twice. Because guess what? We're going to light this whole motherfucker up again if you want to start acting. Because there's a certain level of frustration, that we haven't felt. The brown community, we've felt oppression, but not in the same way the black community has for 400 years here. Like systematically, the only reason black people are in this country is because they were slaves. Nobody came here on a first class ocean cruise trip over here. Everybody was brought here. That's why they are here. Black people in America. These are the ancestors of slaves. So it's like, but we don't feel that. Now we're starting to because we see it and we've never felt that. I have not seen a dozen brown kids being choked to death. I've seen a dozen black kids. I've seen a dozen black kids have guns pointed at them, get shot for having a fake gun, get shot for having Skittles, get arrested for wearing a hoodie. I haven't seen that in the brown community. We have our own racism. But with the black community, it's so hyper tense in America and the history is so real that it's like, that is why all this is happening. I think there's like a breaking point. And for most black Americans, there's no generational wealth. If you saw that documentary 13th, they broke it down brilliantly. I think it's like 10% of the wealth is passed from generation to generation, where it's like 90% in white communities. So it's like when there's no money being moved down, these communities remain broken. And through redlining and through systematically through gerrymandering, where it's like you don't even have a voice to vote in your own township because we just gerrymandered and changed the district. So all of these laws that are in place to keep people silent, guess what? If the whole city's on fire, nobody's silent. These laws don't matter anymore. So that's what's happening because these laws were never made for the people. And now it's coming to a brew because it's like, what else can I do? What do you want from me? Like, what else can I possibly do? You know what I mean? Like, do you want me to go back to Africa? Or what do you want from me? Is this like a Marcus Garvey type pan-Africanism? Is that what you're looking for? Pan-nationalism? What do the racists want? So I think that's what this boiling point is, yo. That's why things are on fire, because there's dead bodies in the streets. And it's like, at what point do we say enough is enough?
Right.
Like, there has to be that point. Mm-hmm. And this is that breaking point, it feels like. This is that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, this definitely feels like a tipping point. For the past number of years, like seeing all these things on the news, it just always created, a bad feeling, but it never made this much chaos. Never impacted so many people at the same time, which is a great thing. And I really, I like the way it's going right now. And D, I want to talk to you about some of these things as well. What do you, how do you feel about all of this? You know, I know like you being in India and, you know, all this shit happening in the US, like, what are your thoughts on it? You know, especially like an outside perspective, you know, we're all in the shit, but like you're out there. So I just wanted to ask you a little bit about that.
I'm going to be honest with you. For the past 15 minutes, everybody was talking. My heart is beating really fast. Because there's like so much anger that we always have. It's very difficult to, as an artist, not, you know, like let everything around you affect so much. So I've literally written down the points like in brief that I want to touch. To begin with, what you were asking about protests. In India, it kind of became opposite because we were all protesting against the Citizenship Amendment Bill. I'm not sure if you guys know about it, but it's something the Modi government is trying to push, in which they will have the right. Basically, they will... They are saying that it's for citizens who have illegally come here, but the like the bottom line has always been to be anti-Muslim. So they basically will filter out Muslims, and they will ask you to show documents ranging back to a century, and they'll ask you to give evidence that you've been in India since, or your family has been in India for the past 100 years. That is bullshit. And basically, the protests were going really strong, but because of the corona thing happening, it has completely came to a standstill. The government is still trying to push it secretly, but I mean, like much like everything else, when Taizu was talking about, you know, having people represent us on the, like, you know, like the in level. The government, in India, that is, even that won't help, because it's like, we have always been like, the entire world has fought with each other when it comes to the color of your skin. We went one step ahead by creating thousands of fucking castes and making sure that one section of the society always remains in the bottom. That is like another thing that you guys were talking about is police brutality. If I try to draw the parallel for the same in India, what has been happening in Kashmir is something that, you know, like is When it comes to that, then people like me are basically the white person in this country, you know, because we have so much privilege. I have so much privilege because I am not a Muslim, or I have so much privilege because I do not belong to a particular caste, which according to people is, you know, like lower caste or whatever. So like, I feel like there's this act called AFSPA, Armed Special Protection Act, basically, which gives the military 100% control over Kashmir, and they can basically shoot anybody and will not be accountable for anything. And they have been doing that for decades now. There have been, you know, piles of fucking body going, people going missing and just being picked up from their houses for any remote connection just because of their, you know, their fucking religion. And because Kashmir is Muslim majority, the rest of the India just does not fucking care. It's been going on since decades, you know. That's how much like it's ingrained in your brain that, I don't know, it is like that. And I feel like I've always drawn this parallel between what happened to Africans for 400 years in another country, where they were brought from another country. We kind of did it to the people around us for 1500 plus years. I'm talking about untouchability, which used to be a fucking reality in India, where I mean, like slaves in Africa, they were not treated as untouchables, because if you can't touch them, how are you going to, you know, whip them or basically make them do what you want to do? In India, people were made to do what you want to do, and at the same time treated worse than animals, saying that you are so filthy that I can't even touch you, or you shouldn't even touch me, or you shouldn't even look at me, or your shadow should not even fall at me when I'm walking from somewhere. That is what we did to our own people for 1500 fucking years. And I feel like when people talk about, even when you know, certain privileged sections of society talk about, it's been so long, you know, it's been, it was hundreds of years ago, why are you still cribbing about it? But the thing is, I don't get how people don't understand this, that segregation, something that ended as early as 1964, and untouchability, which was abolished in India as early as 1950. It's not even been 100 years since that happened. And you already want the people you oppress to act like, oh, it's okay. It's been at least these many years. So, you know, I am at the same level that you are at. You are so fucking blind to the fact that you oppressed them for half a century in India, and in India for 1500 years. Like, that is fucking a long time to oppress an entire section of society. And in India, basically, you have reservation for people from a certain section of society. Even in my own family, or in, you know, like, basically, I feel like the upper class person in India is the equivalent of a white person in America, because they're so blind to the privilege that they have. It's ridiculous. Like, even my own family, they're like, why do we have reservation? Why do they need reservation? Like, they are basically not even doing anything and they're getting all the jobs. But you don't see that they have only got that for 70 years. You are totally ready to ignore the fact that you treated them less than humans for 1500 years. And whatever little help that they're getting now, you want to ask, why do they deserve that? Like, you feel like, I don't know, they are getting an upper hand over you. You know, that is what people, privileged people in the States do as well when it comes to racism. Mm-hmm. They are so blind to it. Like, they are so ready to act like, oh, so what? It's been so many years. Fucking move on. Like, mm-hmm. No, you can't do that, because it's... like, come on, just look at it. Segregation fucking ended only in 1964. How can you act like racism has been wiped out in just been 50 years, and you want everybody to act like everything is A-okay in 50 years? It doesn't happen like that. Mentality takes a long, long fucking time to change. And I am very, very pessimistic at this point of time. Like, you know, Lazarus was saying, with the coronavirus thing going on and the kind of population we have here, I'm just not even thinking about it. It's like a game of chance in a country where 1/7 of the entire world lives. It's like a bad lottery.
That's funny, man. And, you know, you bring up some interesting points there. You know, it's the parallels that you drew about the situation in India and the situation in America with the segregation and with the removal.
One thing in that parallel is that recently in the protests, also there have been lynching that has started happening there. This, people being hung from trees. The same type of shit happens every single day in India with people from lower caste, or especially Muslim people from lower caste. It's a reality. I did a song for this film called Article 15. Whenever you guys get time, you should go watch it. It's about these two girls from a really small village in Uttar Pradesh who dared to ask for a rupees of
good 2 rupees.
Yep. They asked for 2 rupees ka raise, and they were raped and hung from the tree because of their caste. Tumhari aukaat kaise hui, chote caste se hoke, mujhse tumne, you know, like whatever. And this was a government institution, by the way, where they were working, and they asked for a raise. This is the ground reality of this country. Just takes a lot of time for people to change, and the kind of support that you see for BJP right now, just like, pessimism is my state of mind now.
Right, that makes sense.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
What was the name of that movie?
Article 15.
Yeah, I watched it. It's a good movie. You guys should check it out.
Okay, that's it. We'll definitely watch that, man. And, you know, it's interesting the parallels that you brought, and it's like, you know, the way that you mentioned, you know, the privileged class is thinking is basically how a lot of white people think in the U.S. You know, like, I'm not gonna generalize and say everyone, because everyone doesn't. I know that 100%, but there is a percentage of people who actually think just the same way. It's like, hey, it's been hundreds of years, you know, like, just screw it, forget about it. Like, it's done. Okay, it's not our fault. And, you know, I just read a comment over here, and I love the comments, by the way, guys. Keep that thing coming, because it gives us more things to understand what you guys are thinking as well. But I was reading a comment here, if you can bring that up, the one before this. It says, yeah, exactly. People are so quick to get over it when they are blind to their privilege. That's facts right there. And another comment by the same person a little earlier, which was like a longer comment. Can you bring that up a little bit? Yeah, that one. I thought it was really interesting that she wrote that, he or she wrote that, individual cops can be good people. However, no matter how good they are, they exist in a system that is biased and not meant to serve and protect the people of color. I think that system needs to be abolished and rebuilt. That's the main thing that everybody, like, that some people are talking about when they say defund the police, right? Like, that's, that doesn't mean that get rid of the police, but like reduce their funding heavily, right? That's what I think. What do you guys think? Because I'm not, you know, I don't know the 100% of everything they want in the defund the police situation, but I think you guys know a little more about it. Tell me, somebody come out and tell me a little bit about defunding the police. Educate me, guys.
I just want to say one thing about that too, also to some of the points that you made, which I thought were really powerful. I think we got to assess the idea of leadership throughout the world right now too, right? If you look at America, you have someone that's taken the idea of white supremacy or KKK, and the leader is emboldening that, right? You look at India, you have someone like Modi who's taken the most ignorant aspect of society and emboldening that. Now you look out throughout the world, in South America, most of the leaders are doing the same thing also, right? So, you know, I think what's happening throughout the world that's the most dangerous is you have the most ignorant parts of that society winding up in leadership, getting voted in, right? So from when that's happening, the police force and every agency that's, you know, law enforcement is only going to back that agenda, right? So I think we got to also understand that throughout the world, why is it that everyone's going into this oppressive and tribal part of their parties and then electing that in? I think that's going to have the biggest impact on law enforcement as well.
Mm-hmm. Facts. That's right. Cool. I was reading a comment by Divine7i. He was saying that the key to winning the civil war is staying together. That makes sense. I want to take that energy and ask the question about solutions. You know, like, as brown people, as South Asians, what do you guys think we need to do to move to our solution? Like, you know, it's a different aspect for us, and we need to, like, find more ways to have solution and help the African-American community. So what do you guys think is, you know, some of the steps we can take as brown people?
Man, I think people need to, you know, like, for us in the hip-hop community, I feel like just in general, we just happen to be around so many different types of people that we can develop that sort of sense of breaking down the racial tensions that exist. I think people need to go out, mingle, and talk to people of different cultures and communities. I think that's the best way for people need to understand other individuals through their own eyes and through their own experiences. Like, don't just base everything off of things that you hear about. Go out there, man, mingle with people, try to diversify yourself, you know, learn about their cultures, their languages, religions, you know, try to diversify your mind state to think of other people and respect their differences and whatever's going on in the world. Like, I feel like we need to concentrate on that. We need to go out there and mingle with our communities and mingle with the African-American communities, mingle with all the communities that are oppressed, all the communities that have stuff going on. We need to be aware and we need to be in the mix, man. We can't just sit at home and just, you know, just isolate ourselves from all the other communities that are in trouble right now.
Right. I was reading a comment just moments ago, the one that you put up. That one, it's coming back. Just give us a second. Okay, here we go. There's a great initiative called Letters for Black Lives that provides framework to discuss anti-blackness and police brutality with parents, elders, who don't speak English. So that's interesting. It's an Instagram page called Letters for Black Lives. That would be interesting. But Taizu, I want to pose this question to you as well. What do you think we as South Asians, as Desi people, what can we do to move that needle forward?
I think the first thing is awareness, which I think in terms of sharing, conversing, right? We live in an age where, like, this is all possible. We can move at a hyper speed because everything is connected everywhere instantly, right? So I think we need to utilize that. We have access to the whole world. So how can we use that for the benefit of the world, of our people? And I think stuff, panels like this. I think the long-term plays, the short-term is absolutely dialogue and awareness. The communities need to feel support. I think I always think of it as, if this was happening in the brown community, what would we want from our black, white, you know, Asian brothers and sisters? Like, what would we want them to stand with us for? What would we want them, you know, what kind of support would we want? And right. I try to think of it from that angle. So it's always personal, where it's like, how would I want, right? It's like, due to others, how you would want to be treated. So it's like, I think just take a moment and think, like, if you were in that position, right? If that pain, like, and I think what Ali was saying earlier, education is very important, right? One of the things, like, we need to share information. In the black communities, there's that the stereotype of, you know, the uncivilized, uneducated. Well, why? Let's take a moment to understand why there's less education, because there's less access to everything, from fresh foods in grocery markets to books in your schools to everything. There's just less resources. So when you have less, like when you look at villages in India, what's happening in India, right? The problem is we have overpopulation and lack of education. And when those come together, it's really difficult. When you have so many people and not enough ways to educate and get resources, which right now is the bloodline, the internet's everything. It's your access to all the information that's ever existed. When you don't have that and other people have that, you're at an immediate disadvantage in this world now, right? You're at apps. So I think it's about recognizing the disadvantages and using our privilege. Like the Indian guy in New York who opened his house to protesters, that's a small way to help, right? You have access to a property, you have access to space. Bring people into your space, right? Share the resources that we've been privileged with, you know? And as we grow to positions of power, remember what those gaps are, right? What those loopholes are that the racists, that the bigots can exploit in the system and close them, right? Because I feel like the goal with everybody on this panel is to get to a level where they can't deny who we are as brands, as artists, as individuals. That's everyone's goal in this. And when we get to that place and we're going to be in rooms with people of influence and people of power, how we talk to them and how they think, you know what I mean? That's all going to start shaping and reverberating and trickling out. So I think along with our daily dialogue and awareness, it's carrying that energy for, like, what do we want in the future, right? And kind of working backwards of how we get there. Because there's a lot to change. Like Dee was saying with caste, like, that's been gone for, like, it's crazy to be in India how we do that. Like, it's nuts. We were already grouped. And then we're like, nah, further group them. It's not enough. We need to just further group this. Right. And it's just like, yeah. So I think awareness is very important. And dialogue. These are the things that start opening trains of thought, right? Mm-hmm. It'll start shifting the needle, you know? Right. It's shifted from where it was 50 years ago, that's for sure, but clearly it's not where we think it should be. Right. That's the problem. That's the disconnect. It's not that things aren't getting better. It's that they're not moving at a pace that we feel is, it represents who we are right now. It's not moving at the rapid pace that the internet and the world is at right now.
True.
You know? That's true. And one other small thing that I would say, just particularly for brown people, is like the N-word, which is I like, just not using it. Like, I've had this conversation with some of my friends who use it regularly. I don't think anyone is using it, but just for the general, for other, you know, brown people and watching, maybe people in India who say it that don't realize the history that goes with the word. Because a lot of times you listen to rap songs and it's dope. Sometimes you can't even remove it because it's just in the bar. It's ending every bar. You're like, yo, that hits, right? And there's not many words you can replace the N-word with, let's be honest. We're all rappers and writers. Like, it's just a cool, in the context of hip-hop, it works. We can't use, so that's the privilege that the black community has with this. So, but that's something that I think we need to be mindful of, because that word perpetuates a lot of dark history. And I think by not saying it, it shows respect to the community and to the movement of understanding that we respect you. And we kind of know our place in the space as well. You know what I mean? Like, we're not overstepping our bounds, because right. we're still playing in a black culture. I think in the end of the day, we all want respect from Dr. Dre and from Jay-Z and from Drake and from Kanye and from Wayne and from black icons that created the space and made it what it is for us. So I think, and we wouldn't use that word normally in places, you know, and in certain in positions. That's a small thing that we can do as well. That'll reverberate a change on a bigger scale.
That's true. Yeah. Ali Culture, you know, was mentioning in a previous conversation that, you know, we were called sand N-words. You know what I mean? Like, that never felt good. Like, that felt horrible to hear that word. You know, like,
my whole life, man.
Hell, bro. Me too, bro. I feel that.
No, I have been too, y'all. They spray painted, they cut my Christmas lights. They cut my Christmas lights saying, I can't believe in Jesus. I remember here when I put up, it was seventh grade. I put Christmas lights out, right? They cut my Christmas lights saying, you don't believe in Jesus. Like, they spray painted in front of my house. I remember that shit with the little KKK hood. Like, yo, it's, and I'm not saying it's fine, but I'm saying that, that we can shift that narrative just because we got called it doesn't really give us the right to say.
No, definitely not. But
we got called a whole bunch of stuff. I don't want to say those words, though. No, that's on you. That's your ignorant ass saying that to me. That's a reflection of who you are. That has nothing to do with me. You need to deal with that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I, that doesn't make me that. That's you. Like, you keep those words. You know what I mean?
For us, it's like we know how they feel. When they hear the N-word, when African-Americans hear the N-word, we know how they feel because we feel the same when they call us sand N-words. It's kind of crazy like that. Ali Culture, what do you think, you know, as brown people, what do we need to do to move the needle forward?
Well, I think, you know, Brother Lazarus and Taizu said some really powerful things. I agree with everything they said. The only thing I could add to that is I think doing things in practicality, you know, so we have a lot of resources. And I think that doing things in practicality is what's really going to make a change for what we're facing here. We have a lot of, you know, we have a lot of different professions within our communities. We're educated, you know, that's in the kind of the culture of everything we do, whether it's doctors, lawyers, businessmen. You know, I think in practicality, we got to provide resources to these causes and actually put our best foot forward. And, you know, for artists like us, we can broadcast it, but I think even behind curtains, we really got to engage and provide our resources because that's what's actually going to bring change. You know, I think we got to do things differently. Patience and perseverance and diligence is actually what's going to bring a change. So practicality, I think, is what's most important. And I think that's what's lacking. We can all talk about it and be passionate about it. But, you know, are we putting our best foot forward, providing monetary change, resources? That's what's going to bring a change here.
100. That makes sense. Divine Eye 7i on YouTube commented.
Man, by the way, shout out to Divine 7i, this Ghostface Killer cousin. That's my homie.
Hell yeah. Thank you for commenting. And he commented that defunding the police is taking money away from the police and giving it to other parts of the local government, community schools, healthcare clinics, housing authorities, and yeah, that's awesome. Like, thank you for the explanation, Divine. Like, I had some confusions about it, but I wanted to make sure that I got it right, you know. So that's awesome. D, I want to move back to you real quick. What message do you want to give out? You know, we're starting to wrap up, so I just wanted to know what's like some final thoughts that you can share with us.
I honestly don't have anything positive to say because like I said, pessimism is kind of my way of life right now. because the reason that we all of us are sitting here and being able to discuss all of this is because we have made that effort to research and acquire the knowledge, you know, because we feel like we are a part of this culture which was started by Black people. But I don't know how many people in India even know about their own history. So forget about even, you know, trying to understand the history of another culture. Yeah. So I think, Taizu was saying, we need to, start moving forward to make change in the future. But for that to begin in a place like India, we need to actually educate ourselves about what happened in our own history. Because if you kind of want to know about the history of Black people and the oppression that they faced, you can literally listen to 10 rap albums and then feel, okay, maybe I understand, you know, that where they come from. But when it comes to hip hop in South Asia, we have not even started scratching the surface of it. Mostly people are just, I don't know, even the songs we make about institutionalization or the songs we make about which are anti-government, they're so vague. They don't have any weight in it because we don't do the research, you know. We are just being like, oh yes, police is bad. Oh yes, this government is bad. But why is it bad? What has it done? What has it been doing since the past 70 years? A party like BJP coming into power in 2020 is something for the seeds of which were sowed when a party like RSS was formed when India was getting independence. How many people even know about this. So you need to kind of trace your steps back and kind of educate yourself when it comes to the history of what happened to brown as well as black people. Again, like not trying to take away the importance of what is happening in America, but being all the way in India, I feel like I don't know, humans have them, like it's like the worst race because we basically captured the entire earth for ourselves when it comes to animals or nature. We have fucked everything, and India kind of has 1/7 of that entirety of humanity. So there's a lot of negativity. So when artists like me try to tackle the same through whatever messages we are trying to give in our own songs, it takes a lot of mental patience. So for me, I would like to end by saying that when you're trying to bring change, please don't forget about taking care of your own mental health, because if you have, you know, like lost it in your mind, you can't make any change, basically. Right. So yeah, change, start from the house is what I would again like to end with, because like this is something I experienced myself. I used to be so fucking angry with every single headline that I'd read or every single tweet that I saw, that, you know, I used to take everything so fucking personally, that, oh, why is this happening? Oh, why the fuck is the government so bad? This, that. But then I kind of realized there's no point in doing that. If you can change, if you can physically or even through your online presence change the minds of 10 to 50 people, that should be a lot, you know. Nice. So just aim to do that. Nice. Is what I would say.
Yeah, I love that. That's a really good advice, and that's, you know, literally what we're trying to do here. You know, we're trying to have conversations about this among our own community, and I think that's very powerful. That's where it all begins. You know, thank you guys for joining us. You know, before I end, like, I wanted to do this segment that we do in every episode. Okay, it's called Playlist Placement. Now, usually in this segment, I ask you all, like all the guests, to suggest music that they're listening to right now. So in this episode, I'd like to do the same. I wanted to ask you guys but I want you to suggest songs that are like, you know, hard hitting on this type of subject matter. You know what I mean? So just a little bit of twist on this segment. So I just wanted to ask each of you guys, what are you guys listening to right now that is, you know, impactful in this subject? Taizu, I want to ask you first about that.
Sure. I was just listening to All Right by Kendrick before this, just like to get in the mood of this conversation. I'm like, yo, it's the ultimate protest anthem of all time. Like, it's crazy. But yeah, it's a beautiful song. I think anything from Kendrick or Cole's catalog. Cole just dropped the track this morning. It was really dope. Mm-hmm. Forget what it's called. I enjoyed it though. I thought it was ill. But yeah, no, I would say Kendrick's To Pimp a Butterfly. That whole project is is absolutely ludicrous. So for anyone who hasn't heard that, I think it's really good for the soul. It feels right. And Black Panther album. That shit just slaps. Like, it's, yeah, so hard.
Definitely. Definitely. But that's one of my favorites for sure. Lazarus, bro. Give us a song,
man. Actually, what I think is a good representation, man, it's LL Cool J, man, dropped a dope freestyle, man, about what's going on right now, and I loved it. I loved it from a technical standpoint and from the standpoint of his message. I thought that was like probably the dopest thing I've heard with regards to what's going on right now in this particular situation. And I was just talking to LL Cool J the other day too, so that was just phenomenal. But yeah, he dropped a freestyle about the protesting and what's going on right now. Y'all need to check it out if y'all ain't heard it.
Amazing, thank you. D, I want to ask you about one of these songs.
I actually have a different answer, because honestly, for me, when I watched this series called The Wire, and when I watched that series, I felt like earlier I used to understand what Kendrick is saying, but after watching that show, I kind of got the deeper references of what he was, you know, trying to say about the day-to-day lives, about a kid peeping out of his window and just being shot because he's peeping out of his window. So even shows like these will give you a lot of perspective about the lives that, you know, Black people lead in America. So anybody who has not watched The Wire from India, if you listen to a lot of street music in hip-hop and you know, feel like you really understand what is happening with them, if you watch that show, you're definitely going to know in person, you know, like a little more, a little better of what exactly they are talking about.
That's awesome. That's a great recommendation. I like that. You know, it helps people learn more. That's all what we want. Ali Culture, Mike's yours. What do you think?
Man, to what Dee also said, I watched this documentary on Netflix just a couple of days ago. It was about the riots in in South Central when Rodney King happened. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really powerful documentary that I watched recently, just because I watched it a couple of days ago. It really shed a lot of detailed level of light on footage that is just not seen, you know, when it was happening, what role it really took on the communities when they did, burn down all the local businesses over there, and what impact it had over there, and how nothing has changed over there. They've just gone a lot downhill, you know. So I think it's important for us to understand the past so we don't replay it. You know, we got to understand how things went to understand how these things really function. So I thought, you know, that's powerful. And I've been listening to a lot of Pac recently, man, from Thug Life on, you know, I've been listening to a lot of that. I think if you want to get in a mode of understanding, listen to some Pac.
That makes sense, man. That's awesome. I myself have been enjoying the new Roddy Ricch song. Like, it's and DaBaby and Roddy Ricch, like, it's been like on blast for me. And the new Lil Baby song, where he shot it in a protest. That one was epic for me. But I wanted to end the show by appreciating you guys, man. You guys are the leaders of your communities, you know, and like, your word matters so much. I know, like, people look up to you, and you know, it's just like, it's amazing what you guys do with your lyricism, with their music, with your whole brand. Like, each and every one of you guys here on the call have that brand and that, you know, lyricism, that knowledge aspect on point, and I love it. And I just want to support it, you know. I just want to appreciate you guys and like, really applause, you know, for each of you guys for doing everything that you guys do, man. So, you know, thank you for joining. This is like, I think we've had a great conversation today, you know, with you guys, and I think it will definitely make people think about certain things, you know, the viewers. And if you, the viewers, have any problems with whatever we've discussed today, please drop it in the comment section on YouTube, Facebook, on Instagram. When we post these clips, drop it in the comment section. Let's have a conversation. You know, let's not battle. Let's not beef. If you got a problem with anything we said, let's talk. Let's talk. Let's have a conversation in the comment section. Don't call me. Don't call us. Just drop it in the comments. All right. okay. So thank you guys, man. I appreciate it. This, you know, this brings an end to the show. I really hope, you know, and you know, God bless each of you guys, and you know, hope that all your goals come true. You know, we'll be supporting you, and the fans will definitely be supporting you guys.
Salute. Thank you, Raf.
Hey, my brother. Hey.
Thank you, brother. Hell yeah, I appreciate it. Peace. Like, we'll see you next week, guys. Peace.
Peace out.